What was the last phrase you said after existentialism? Can you tell me, please, what is existentialism?
What it is?
Yeah.
As in you have
it. Yeah.
It's an individualist philosophy.
What does that mean, an individualist philosophy? I think it's really important to take responsibility for one's own actions. And actually, okay, what I'm going to do is I'm going to spin this off in a different direction, if you don't mind. I'm friends with Frances Morla Pay, by the way, and she gave me this great advice, which is, if anybody ever asks you a question that you don't want to answer, use one word from their question in the first sentence of your answer, and then you can say whatever you want, and they'll think you've answered it. So what I think about existentialism is that one should take responsibility for one's actions. Okay, where I want to go with this, at least for now, is that sometimes people will throw out this idea that if you use toilet paper, that you're just as culpable for the destruction of the planet as the CEO of Weyerhaeuser. You know, I drive a car, so I'm responsible for global warming. It's my fault. And I have a couple things to say about that. One is, if I were to die, Weyerhaeuser would, deforestation would still continue, and so would global warming. It's not my fault. And the second thing is, I'm placed firmly in the center of this system. And I know this isn't what you asked, but anyway, I'm placed firmly in the center of the system, and I can't take responsibility for what's not mine. And, it was great. I was with some anarchists in Portland after a talk. And I'm going to talk about some other anarchists for a second. This is why there'll never be an anarchist revolution. Because I was down in Florida, and after the talk, there was, I think, 12 of us anarchists were going to go out to dinner. It took us a half hour to try to come to consensus on who goes in which car. And finally this one woman just said, look, you three, this car, you four, this car, you two, this car. And we're like, okay, cool. And so that's how we get the revolution. She should call it. Anyway, we're up in Portland, and we're all going to go get something to eat. And we're driving around, and one anarchist, just like a joke, one anarchist said to the other, one anarchist said, we should go to this restaurant over here because they pay the people who work there, they pay them a livable wage, it's unionized, it's great, you know, it's all organic food. And then the rest of us just looked at each other and said, we can't afford to eat there. And so the point is, we didn't create the whole logic of consumerism, all that stuff. So, okay, I'm going to jump tracks here. And I was in Spokane a couple years ago doing a talk, and I was going to do a radio interview first. And the guy on the radio said, Indians exploited salmon too. And I said, no, they didn't. They ate them. And he said, what's the difference? And I said, well, they gave them respect for their spirit in exchange for the flesh. And I know it's kind of bullshit, but I didn't know what else to say. And I'm a male, so I have to give an answer. And then afterwards, I went out and I sat by the coyote tree, which you'll recognize from language, and I was sitting there, and the tree gave me the answer, which is, you know, I was asking, what's the relationship, what's the predator-prey relationship? What does the predator give to the prey? And the tree gave me the answer, which is, if you consume the flesh of another, you take responsibility for the continuation of the other's community. So I can eat the salmon who is a part of this run. I am now responsible for this river. I am now responsible to make sure that this run continues, both on a moral level and on a straight physical eating level, because if I don't, then the salmon aren't going to come back. I mean, if you eat more than, it doesn't take a rocket scientist to figure out that if you eat more than are there, then eventually they'll disappear. It takes anybody but a rocket scientist to figure that one out. So that's my responsibility. So if I use toilet paper, I am responsible for halting deforestation. I want to go another direction now and say, I used to think that our culture specialized, and this is all in the new book, the book I'm writing. Okay, I'm going to go another direction now, which is that, okay, so after I wrote this book, my publisher challenged me to write a short book, so I wrote two. One of them's coming out this summer on deforestation, and one of them's coming out next spring, and it's on education. I took the 5 or 10 pages from language, and I expanded those into a whole book. And then the book I'm doing now about how to take down civilization, and this summer I'm doing a book on FBI and corporate surveillance techniques, another short book. And then I'm also doing a coffee table book on zoos. It's going to be using zoos as a central metaphor for our culture. There's this photographer who's amazing, done these just heartbreaking pictures of, it's going to be anti-zoo book, I mean, of course. And I'm doing that. And then this big book, which is going to be even bigger than this one, is the best book I've written so far. It's so good. Anyway, so one of the things in there is that the culture, I used to think that the culture specializes in parodies, that like heaven is a parody of sort of heaven right now, right here, you know, the eternal present thing. I mean, hey, that's kind of an existential thing, isn't it? Also, rape is a parody of sex, and war is a parody of play. And those who've read Culture Make-Believe understand what I'm saying with that. But then I realized, a friend of mine said, no, parody's not right, it's toxic mimic. And what it does is it takes the form and it gives an entirely different content to it. So rape takes the form of sex and gives an entirely toxic content to it. And so our notion of responsibility in this culture, especially like, oh yes, I'm responsible for global warming, is a toxic mimic of our real responsibility. And I'm going to take a jump again and say, one of the things that abused children do all the time, the section I'm writing right now is a big, long section, about 100 pages long. I took a list from Dear Abby where she talked about the characteristics of abusers. Like if you're in a relationship with somebody who has these 12 characteristics, of course, if you're in a relationship with a person with 12 those 12 characteristics, you probably can't see them because of the Lester Laborsky stuff. But anyway, if you do see them, if one of your friends see them and tells you, then you should get out. And the thing about this list is it's a one-to-one correspondence with the culture at large. The culture is an abusive culture. Jealousy is a big one. That's like the first one she says. If your partner's really jealous, like hyper-jealous, that's a sign of it. And of course, the dominant culture is really jealous of any allegiance except to capitalism or industrial civilization, whatever. Tries to convince you you can't live without it. God, we can't live without civilization, can we? Where am I going to get my internet connection? And so on and so on. Oh, here's a great one. Is insensate to the pain of children and animals. Can you say vivisection? Which, by the way, jumping again, I wrote this pretty good article, I think, it was in The Ecologist a few months ago, saying that I actually do support vivisection. I'm absolutely a strong proponent of vivisection with one minor administrative change, which is that the vivisectors can only do the experiments on other vivisectors, in which case I'm all over it. Because the experiments are very important, and they'll recognize that they're very important, and they'll make that sacrifice, I think. And then I would extend it also to like CEOs of pharmaceutical companies and also main shareholders. And they can work on them all they want, and I'm cool. Anyway, so abused children oftentimes assume responsibility for the abuse that's done to them. If I would have just cleaned the dishes well enough, my father wouldn't have hit me. If I would have just parked the car here instead of here. And that's crucial when you're powerless. When you're absolutely powerless, you have to take on some power, otherwise you'll drive yourself insane. So to start going, I'm responsible for deforestation because I use toilet paper, is an acknowledgement of my powerlessness in the larger scheme of things, but that's really dangerous because the truth is we do have power and we are culpable for something far greater than using toilet paper, which is for not stopping Weyerhaeuser. That's our responsibility, for not shutting down the whole system. My responsibility for global warming is not because I drive a car, having been born in a car culture. My responsibility is for not shutting down car culture as a whole, which is much more serious. So that's how I want to take responsibility for my actions. If I eat a hamburger, I am taking responsibility to shut down factory farming. And of course, I want to take responsibility for my actions individually. Like I said, I eat meat, so I don't, except when I'm on the road, except at restaurants, I don't support factory farming. I eat half a cow, I mean, I buy half a cow from a rancher, you know, local rancher, blah, blah, blah. So I try to take that responsibility. But on the other hand, I'm not going to torture myself over using toilet paper. You ask about existentialism, I talk about toilet paper. How's that? Somehow it seems to be sort of a connection there between philosophy and wiping my behind. It's just I think that Kierkegaard would approve. Question?
Yeah.
Another question I can avoid?
Yeah.